Welcome back, Chad Cox. It's good to see your face. This is Howl History, and it has been 301 days since we last talked about the Timberwolves for others to hear. We have exchanged many, many texts and many, many messages over the time, but this is our first time back on the pod. Chad, how you doing?
Pretty good. Well, we've even seen each other a few times at games.
We have, yep. We run into each other. You've got your season tickets. I pop in every month or so just to stop at your seat and bug you.
Yeah, but it was good meeting your dad last time.
Yeah.
Known you for, like a long-ass time, but never met your dad, so that was cool.
Yeah. No, we had a good time. We saw each other at the playoff game, which was unfortunately the losing one, and then I brought my wife back for the winning game, but you weren't at that one, unfortunately. So.
Yeah, no, I ditched my tickets on that one. I needed to recover from the play-in game.
Yep.
The playoff, like it was, and then the two road games, staying up late.
Mm-hmm.
I was beat, so I was like, I just gave
up my tickets. And it was your birthday weekend, so happy birthday.
And it was my birthday, that's right.
Yeah. You're what, 52 now?
I have like 58. I don't know. I lost count, to be honest. Somebody just asked me the other day, not how old I was because of my birthday, but something else, and I was like, I told them the wrong age.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute, that's not
it anymore.
Whatever.
Yeah. And the funny part is, that's happened to me before too, but it's not even like last year's age. I'm always like 3 years off. And I'm like, what happened?
That's the way this was. Yeah. I was doing the math in my head. I like had to literally use my fingers. I'm like, nope.
Yeah. There it is.
I didn't correct it. I just was like,
whatever.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm still 38. It's good.
Yeah. At some point, it doesn't matter anymore.
We're just old.
Yep.
We're old, which is why we didn't have the energy for a season like this. The last time we talked, Chad, it was recently and probably about a week after Rudy Gobert had been acquired by the Timberwolves. And we then hit a stretch, whether through work or through family obligations or whatever happened to be, where we got busy. But at the same time, we went through a bunch of reasons why it didn't make sense or wasn't as exciting to jump back on and talk about this Timberwolves squad. Because I think we hit a point very early on where what we do and the analysis that we can provide is very much stifled by a team that is just supposed to be good. We're not film watchers. We're not going to break down the X's and O's the same way that others can. So when you come into a season with high expectations and the roster is largely set, it's hard to really come in and talk about that over and over again weekly. This Timberwolves squad, which came in expecting to be top four seed in the Western Conference, expecting to be 50-plus wins, Twin Towers 2.0, whatever it happened to be, we were able to give our thoughts on the trade immediately. But to follow along, I just didn't feel like we had a whole ton to offer. And then shortly after that, the frustration started. And I don't know if it would have been healthy for us to try jumping on here every single week and analyzing the ups and up and down nature, but I don't know.
What I liked about it was our texts were back and forth. Your most frustrating points weren't my most frustrating points, and vice versa. Like the times I felt like I was like I'd go to bed and I'd wake up and I'm like, wow, I was on one last night.
Yeah.
Back and forth with Derek, like, you know, whatever I was upset about, and vice versa. Like there's times I was like, wow, he's really down on this team in a way. I don't remember last time he was this down. I think like, so it's kind of funny how whether it was just a specific thing that really irked us more than others, you know, and didn't irk you, if it was that, or if it was like our breaking points just happened to be at different times.
Yeah.
And the accumulation was kind of the same, but it just hit us at different times. It was just, that part was kind of humorous to me.
It was. I mean, in each game had its own moments, right? Like how many games throughout the entire course of the season where you watched start to finish and you felt good about the team the whole time? I mean, there were three, maybe. We could put together a good half. We could put together really good quarters, but putting together a full game was not really the strong suit of this Timberwolves squad.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one part of what came out when we were texting each other is that we have different standards for that. Mm-hmm. Like, there was my standard, like, there was games, whether I watched or went to, that I had fun going to that we still ended up losing.
Yeah.
But that I felt like the game was entertaining all the way through. And maybe it was entertaining and it was a team we shouldn't have even been close with. Like,
right.
we should have beat them by 15 or 20, but for whatever reason, it was entertaining. There was games like that I liked. There was a lot of weird games. Like I was at both the Mo Bamba Rivers fight and then the Kyle Anderson Rudy one. So that was two things I hadn't seen before. But there was a lot of moments for me that I still felt like it was a fun season despite the down moments I still had. Like, look, before last year, there was way more miserable years. Like, so just to caveat everything else we talked about today, mm-hmm. there was so many, like, whether it was, I loved Rick Adelman and I liked that team. Those teams, like, that was the, we weren't even 500 and we were like celebrating it right. as a successful year because we won 40 games or whatever, you know. We don't have a lot to really hang our hats on in terms of like fun years as a whole after 2004. Like, there's, you know, the last 2 years and maybe the Jimmy year and that's it.
Yeah. And the Jimmy year wasn't even that fun.
It wasn't. Like, there was, like, I wasn't a big fan of Jeff Teague. I wasn't a fan of Tibbs. I, you know, I liked Jimmy when we got him. I mm-hmm. gradually became one of the guys I hate most. But there's just, like, yeah, it wasn't as fun. Like, last year was fun because it was a little bit unexpected, but it was like, a fun brand of basketball. Like,
yeah.
The personalities were fun. The Beverleys, the, you know, Vando being like that do-it-all guy. So you lose two of your more fan favorite players
mm-hmm.
for a guy that's just not fun in Rudy. Whether even if you like him as a player, he's not like a fun player to watch. Like, there's nothing. What he's good at is defense, and he's not good at defense in the way that Vando was good at defense, or the way that Jaden's good at defense. He's fun in defense in that he's 7'2" and
right,
takes up a lot of space. That's not what are you watching there? You're watching a really tall guy stand there. You know, it's just not like
right. And you look up 8 minutes later, and the lead has increased by three because yeah. that's just what happens when Rudy's on the floor. But
sure,
yeah.
So it's like it's not the aesthetically the same type of game you watched last year. And so from that part, I totally get all that. And then, you know, obviously, to me, like, you know, the expectations of top four, 50 mm-hmm. wins or whatever were gone as soon as Towns went down, because like at the time he went down, he was arguably still your best player. And I think silver linings there is Ant was able to securely snatch that from him during that time.
Yeah.
But there was question marks even during that run about whether that was going to happen, because there was games that Ant just took off that were against teams that were at the bottom of the,
yeah, and he was one of the biggest culprits of that, and I think the whole team yep. had a problem with that all season long, which was one of the things that made it so frustrating, because I think, you know, as you were saying, there are a few things that can go into enjoyability when it comes to watching basketball, and for me, it's largely winning and losing is number one. If they won, I had a good time. If they lost, I had a harder time having a good time.
But see, that's where, yeah. And I know that's where we differ, but like the Jimmy year is a perfect example. They won, but it wasn't fun.
Right. And that's why I said there are other things that go into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right,
you know,
right.
And, you know, second for me is probably expectations, which is the part I have the least control over, which, like, I could just get over that mental block and say, I don't have any expectations. If they win, that's great. If they lose, whatever, you know. But, you know, largely it's just kind of like, I know what I expect this, what level I expect this team to play at or to be able to play at, especially with a team this talented. And maybe that's a conversation for another day on whether or not this team is actually as talented as we thought they were. But what, you know, with the level of play that I expected out of this team, to see them continually, you know, crap the bed against the bottom feeders or not come out with the necessary aggression, that was, you know, part of the most frustrating for me, was knowing what they were capable of and then knowing what they consistently put on the floor. And then the third part is just the enjoyability factor, the entertainment. And they had less of that than past teams, you know, as you were saying, with Rudy replacing Vando and with Austin Rivers replacing Pat Bev, you know, it was just, there were changes that were made there, which made it not as kitschy, you know, in during the process, not as...
Well, and they're just like, it's kind of more of an older school, like, with just putting Rudy on the floor, you're not able to fly around
yeah.
and, like, create havoc. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, Vando's like, you know, I mean, it's like he's playing with his shorts on fire. So like, it's fun to watch
yep.
just in a Dennis Rodman kind of way. Whereas like, I'm not comparing Vando. I'm not saying Vando's as good as Rodman, and I'm not going to say Rudy's as good as Akeem Olajuwon, but there was like the offense aside, Akeem was fun to watch on offense, but on defense, it'd be like watching Akeem on defense versus mm-hmm. watching Rodman on defense. Well, Rodman was more fun because he's just creating
yep.
havoc out there. And that's kind of what we got. We got like this sort of fundamental tall guy playing defense now, instead of like this guy who was making up for a lack of size by just busting his butt
yeah.
all over the floor. So it's, you know, that definitely took a hit. from last year, just from the viewability of the team.
Yeah, and last year, I mean, had a combination of all three of those things. You know, they won more games than they had won in years. They won many more games than expected, and they were enjoyable to watch, and they had the entertainment factor.
Right.
So that's what made, you know, such a perfect storm last year. And no, they weren't a team that was going to go anywhere, and we both agreed in the last offseason that they needed to make changes to reach their potential, because the rest of the Western Conference was either going to get better, or they were going to take a step back, or they weren't going to have the same health luck, which they didn't. You know, so that if they had just run it back with last year's squad, adding Kyle Anderson, they're not making the playoffs this year. No matter how enjoyable it was, with Carl going down, with all the other challenges that they faced, this team was not going to make the playoffs if they hadn't added Rudy. That doesn't mean we're super excited or super happy with how the season went, having added Rudy Gobert, but they had to make changes. It's just a bummer by, you know, with what the end result ended up being this year.
Right.
So with all that said, with the fun part out of the way, let's talk about who you were most impressed by. Who do you have a higher opinion now, a higher opinion of now than you did 12 months ago?
Well, I have two guys.
Okay.
And the first one I won't spend a lot of time on because we've talked about him a lot on here. But first one is Jaden, and I was already president of the Jaden fan club, so it's not like it's But he's still the one of the ones I'm probably the most like. I think when I what I saw in him when I liked him as much as I did even last year was a ceiling of a guy that could be like an Andre Kirilenko type.
Mm-hmm.
Now I actually think he can be more like, I honestly think he could be a 20 point per game guy while also being like, I do see him more as like a Paul George, Kawhi Leonard hybrid, like somewhere in between those two guys, in the sense that I think he could be like a Kawhi Leonard on defense. I don't think he'll be the clutch shooter or big time shooter that Kawhi is, but I think he can do some things on offense that Paul George can do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's different, but I'm just trying to come up with like a comp for what the outcome of what his stats would be, right? So like I could see him as a 20. I'd like to see his rebounds go up, but it's hard for a guy to rebound when they're chasing the best scorer on the floor, because a lot of time you're out on the perimeter. That's why Mikal Bridges also doesn't rebound terribly high.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so that's my number one. My number two one was Nikhil Alexander-Walker. He was a guy I kind of liked in the brief times I saw him in New Orleans. I didn't really pay attention to him in Utah at all, even though apparently he was actually playing a little bit better in Utah. So when the Wolves made the trade, I was like, I think you and I both texted, were like, well, I'm kind of intrigued by that. I felt like when that trade was made, I was a little bit down that all we got was a 35-year-old replacement for D'Lo. But even I was wrong on that, because Conley was such a better fit for the team that the fit difference alone made such a big impact. And conversely, it made a big impact for the Lakers too, because D'Lo's a way better fit than Westbrook was for that team. Mm-hmm. So it kind of was one of those win-win-wins, because I think Westbrook even helped the Clippers when they didn't have Paul George. So it was one of those rare everybody wins trades. But I was more content with the four or three second-round picks, whatever it was, and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, just hoping like, oh, maybe he can become something next year. And then he gets sort of thrust into this big role this year. And he had his up and down moments. He came out hot. I really liked what I saw. And then he got to a point where I'm like, okay, he's taking too many shots. He's way too much filling that Jalen Noel role where he's just shooting everything. And so that must be a Finch thing, just the green light thing.
Yeah, if you have the shot, you have to take it.
Yeah.
Otherwise you ruin
the
offense.
That was starting to bug me with him. But then he cleaned that up, you know, at the last couple games of the season. And then throughout the playoffs, he was amazing. So that is the one I'm the highest on. That since the last time we talked, obviously we didn't even talk about him because he wasn't on the team, so it's a little bit of an unfair one. That's why I threw two names in there.
Right. Jaden. Yeah, I mean, I had both of them and Conley, which who you mentioned as well.
Okay.
You know, I feel like everybody on this list for who I'm impressed by comes with a caveat, and then everybody on our next list for who I had a frustrating season with also is going to come with a caveat, you know, to those notes as well. But you know, Jaden, I think I very much, and we've talked about this plenty of times before, I had a great time watching Jaden this season. I feel like the fouls are going to either just be a thing that he works around, which he did this year, or he's going to clean it up and he's going to be unstoppable on defense. I mean, it's either he's going to be a 95th percentile defender with the fouling, or he's going to be a 100th percentile defender without the fouling. You know, it's defensively, I feel like he finally got the recognition stats-wise for the contributions that he's making. We talked about that a couple years ago. That was one of my keys to the season, I think, two seasons ago, was that I wanted his defensive reputation to actually translate into on-court performance and on-court numbers. And this year it did. Every graphic you saw this year had Jaden just as one of those outliers in the top right corner, you know, talking about his ability to defend the perimeter and the rim, or his ability to take on the best player in the other team and stop their shots, you know, or whatever happened to be. So every combination, every stat, you know, this year just touted his defense. It's why, even though he probably, I would still not expect him to end up on an all-defensive team just because of the competition at the forward spots.
Really? This year you don't think he will?
I don't think he will, because I think all-defensive voting, I think, is largely reputation-based.
And I think so, too. I think people were starting to see him last year. The people that vote, I think, were starting to see him last year. But at the same time, I mean, I know, like, at the exit interview or whatever with Conley, they asked him what was he...
Yeah.
Kind of the same kind of question for him. It was worded a little bit more like, what was your biggest surprise coming mm-hmm. to the Wolves midseason? And he threw out Naz, Reed, yeah. and then Jaden. It was the other one. He's like, he was like, Jaden, you know, I knew he was pretty good, but I didn't know he could do all the things he can do.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that's what you hear from a lot of the guys. You know, like the only ones that, like the players that have been around him, like the Ants and Cats and those guys have been since his rookie year, all are like, oh, no, we see this Jaden every day. Right, like, we know he's like that good. But like the media, or like I listened to Michael Grady was on Kilbourn's podcast mm-hmm. and he was asked the same question. And he said the same two guys, ironically, Conley and Jaden and Naz and Jaden, that Conley said.
Yeah.
And he said the same thing about Jaden. Like, he knew a little bit about Jaden from last year. So I think Jaden's name was enough. It was out there. If you wanted to be the smart basketball, like,
right.
obviously everybody in Minnesota knew him because, you know, it's our team. But if you were outside Minnesota and you wanted to come off sounding smart, like, you would throw out Jaden McDaniel's name. I think he was one of those trendy, like Mikal Bridges was a couple years ago when people were throwing his name out. Now everybody knows him too. But so I think he will make an all defensive team this year.
I mean, I think he's plenty deserving. I'm a skeptic at heart. So I would be surprised still if he ended up on the list. It would be a nice surprise. But I wouldn't say he doesn't deserve it ahead of the other names that are listed in contention. I just think it would be, with the reputation, the longevity of doing it many years in a row, I think.
There will definitely be guys on the list that I don't think are anywhere near as good as defenders as him because of the reputation. Exactly. Yeah, so I get that.
I mean, I think Kobe was an all-NBA defender or all-defensive team guy for like 9 straight years or something like that. And I don't think he was ever to that level. So, So my caveat, though, that I was largely working my way back to was that, you know, I can run hot and cold with Jaden as an offensive player based on his three-point shooting. And it's not necessarily because I think that's how he's best utilized or his only value. He showed a lot more off the bounce game. He showed a lot more ability to attack off a closeout this year, to really get into the paint. He's got his fadeaways, he's got his floaters, whatever happens to be, anything from 7 feet and in, he's got more ability from that range than a lot of other players on this team.
I think he's an underrated ball handler.
Like, yeah,
he looks weird.
To get to where he wants to, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he has it. But I think to reach not only his potential, but just where we saw him as an effective offensive player this year, I mean, he shot 40% from three. And I think that was a large stepping stone towards him being an efficient offensive player in this offense. And you can have conversations for hours about whether or not the way Finch has utilized him over the last 3 years has been the best way for him and the most effective thing to do for his offensive growth and his offensive skill set. But I mean, and this is going to go with any offensive player, but if he can shoot 40% from three, he's going to be a dangerous offensive player no matter what else is happening. So if he goes back to 32% next year and he's one of those players that has those yearly swings on his three-point shot, it's going to limit him as an all-around player. And our idea of him as a Paul George or whatever it happens to be as Ant's running mate. But
even at 35% or whatever three, he's still like a Kyle Anderson plus on offense.
Yeah.
Because he can do more than Kyle can.
You know, so I think he had an amazing year especially, you know, both on defense and on offense. I would say he needs to clean up his fouls on defense, which everybody knows. He also needs to continue to retain his shooting ability that he had this year in order to reach that potential that we saw out of him all year. So, I mean, that's the only caveat you can throw at him, and it's the one thing I'm watching for as we head into next year with him, is does that sustain as he adds more to his bag? Because he's going to continue to get better. He's going to get bigger. He's going to add more.
And, yeah, I think he'll just get more opportunities as guys get older. Like, this team's all of a sudden starting to get old.
Yeah.
So when you have Conley and Rudy as two of your starting five now, you're going to have more games where Jaden just has to be asked to do more. And I think, like Ant, the more you throw at these two guys, the better they've been. Mm-hmm. Like, I actually think the more responsibility you give them, the better they are. Now, I'm not saying I think you can shoulder those two as being the two guys for the franchise and expect them to be a playoff team without, you know, another couple years of growing. But I think that, you know, Jaden has not under-delivered every time the assignment's gotten bigger. Yeah, he's always come back given you what you wanted.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, I had Nikhil on my list as well. And I think he was a guy I liked in the pre-draft process, and I, you know, would have been excited to get him. Not somebody that I liked enough to say they need to go out and acquire him or target him or whatever it happened to be. But so when his name started popping up, it was somebody that I remembered from that time, and I hadn't really paid attention to since. I know there had been rumors, like you said, in his time with New Orleans, that he'd been having a hot stretch, or his defense had really changed things for a couple week span. And so, you know, the anecdotes here and there about the impact he was able to make. But then he went to Utah and he was largely forgotten because that team was just a mishmash of players who hadn't paid attention to or chose not to pay attention to once they got there. So him coming over, I knew the name. I knew the reputation based off of, you know, where he had been at times, but didn't know a whole lot about him. And when he, you know, his shooting was hot at first, fell off, and he would probably be talking about him completely differently if Jaden hadn't broken his hand, because he wouldn't have gotten that opportunity in the playoffs. He wouldn't have been set on Murray. So we wouldn't have been able to see him contribute what he can. But now the concept and the thought of him coming in that guard rotation next year to provide that extra level of defense the way that we know he can makes this offseason, if not an optimistic one, a tolerable one, with the thought of the pieces that they have and the number of gaps and the number of holes they need to fill. Because as we're going to get to later with what they need and what they need to be looking at, I think there could have been just too many holes or too many gaps if he hadn't stepped in and proven that if they retain him as a restricted free agent, he'll really be able to be a core part of that rotation next year.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because the guys that you didn't expect to be building around are the guys that are becoming the most indispensable. It's guys like him and Nas and Slow-Mo.
Yeah.
Who are like the three guys that are like, where the heck would this team be without those guys right now? And they obviously, you know, we'll probably talk about Nas, but there's like the questions about bringing him too. You know, to me, Nikhil's going to be a cheaper player to bring back, more than likely. But I think he has to be your first guard off the bench.
Yeah.
Going into next year, I don't think anybody that's on the bench brings you anything close to what he brings you. So
out of the currently available options,
right? Yes. Right. Yeah. Yep.
I would say that as we get into our team needs for next year, first guard off the bench is probably going to be at the top of my list. So we'll find one.
Quality guards are premium now in the NBA, and so they're hard to get. So like in free agency, the best guards you might be able to acquire aren't going to necessarily be significantly better than Nikhil anyway.
No, like, and hopefully they bring in somebody who has a completely different role set than Nikhil as well, so that you can use them in the right situations.
Both, right.
Yeah. So I considered putting Nas on the list almost exclusively out of his performance after Carl came back, which if you ask me, was the best stretch of his career before he broke his wrist. He was actually contributing on both ends. He was getting his hands into the passing lanes. He was legitimately impactful, not only to the eye test, but also to the numbers for those last couple weeks before he got injured. And overall, his numbers on the season aren't that great in terms of his on-court impact, his net rating, whatever it happened to be, depending on who he was playing with. With either of the other two bigs, he was not good. When it was him and Ant on the floor without any other bigs, they were a good tandem. I think they were they were over 3 points per possession better I take it back. 2.6 points per possession better than the other, or points per 100 possessions better than the opponent, when it was just Nas and Ant and no other big. So I think there was something there. I think, as we've seen, Ant plays well with Nas because of his ability to both roll or pop, you know, off of the screen.
Well, and to not have to do anything with him.
Yeah.
Like, Ant can just play as Ant, yeah, and Nas will figure out and get his.
Exactly.
On his own. Whereas the other bigs, you kind of need to get them the ball, mm-hmm, in order for them to be able to do anything. Nas doesn't carry the gravitas that Towns does. Like, he's I've always said, a poor man's Towns, but he doesn't have the Towns number one pick sort of reputation where, yeah, you feel the need to get him the ball, or the max player, you just gave up everything in your future to get him, that Rudy has, so they feed him 18 times unsuccessfully into the post. Like, mm-hmm, Nas doesn't get those opportunities. And obviously that he's another guy that we've always differed on. Like, I've always been way higher on him than you have. So I didn't have him on my list. I did think that over the course of the year, I actually thought this was his best season as a pro too.
Yeah.
And I actually think it's weird because, like, Rudy, you always look at his defense on off numbers are always better than the eye test when, yeah, you watch. I always, you know, when we text, I'd always bring up the,
right,
what does he do other than being tall?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see, yeah, him deter anything. I see guys go around him. If they can't go around him, then they kick out. But I don't see Rudy, like, sliding in and eating up space. I don't see him walling up. I don't see him blocking a bunch of shots like he used to in Utah. I don't see him doing anything other than being 7'2". And Nas, while he might get himself out of position, I see him hustling. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like a center version of what Beasley was on defense, but a little bit better.
Sure.
You know, like, Beasley looked like he was working his tail off.
Well, you know, defense. You know what? I'd even go one step above that, and I'd say Nas on defense is to what Beasley was on offense.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, that's probably a nicer way of putting,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, Beasley's activity and Beasley's effort on offense was a general neutral contributor to the team's success. I mean, you always liked him shooting 40% from three. You always, you know, wanted to contribute that to making the team better, but the numbers never really backed it up that much. But you could see the effort he was putting in. You could see the value that he provided.
Yeah, and even on defense, I thought he put effort. Like, it wasn't playing defense.
You could see the effort, but you knew it was a misguided effort.
It was bad, right. Yeah, that, yeah, is in the same way, like, whereas D'Lo, you didn't see the effort,
yeah,
on defense. And so then you knew it was, like, and weirdly, D'Lo might have decent numbers on court on defense. And you'd be like, well, why? He didn't do it. He would just, mm-hmm, literally just kind of sag off, and that would kind of just eat, right, space. But he's communicating, whatever. He was adding certain, yeah, value.
Eating,
but,
space, which is the Lakers, like, entire defensive strategy, is, yeah, just to, I mean, put five guys in the paint.
They should trade for Rudy.
Yeah.
But Nas has always been, I mean, Nas is a hustler on offense too. Nas is just a,
yeah,
the other reason why I like him so much on this team is when this team does get lazy and stagnant, and, like, you can inject Nas in there, and things are going to happen because Nas.
Right. All of my feelings about Nas's history with this team, I 100% wanted him during the Lakers play-in game, during the early start of this Denver series. Like, there were clear periods where the offense just shut down and they needed him on the floor because he was one of the few people who not only knew how to run Finch's system, but also could do things with the ball himself because of his skill
set. Him and Jaden. That's, yeah, what sucks so bad about the Denver series is those were the two guys when things bogged down this season that could make things happen for themselves. And,
right,
you know, but.
So, I mean, like I said, I have probably a stronger opinion of Nas now than I did 2 months ago. I'm more than willing to discuss the possibility of bringing him back, depending on what the contract size happens to be. I know that they mentioned many times in the exit interviews as a part of the young core or as a key priority to the offseason. I still don't know how that works with both Rudy and Carl on the team. I think that as a bench player, as a bench center, he works really well, and I think he's somebody that you could have in that role, but I just don't see the value in putting $10 to $15 million a year into your third center. And
I mean, I agree if the thought is you're going to have all three of them for the length of their contracts.
Yeah.
I would say Nas becomes the most valuable guy to re-sign, even over any free agent that you could potentially sign in his place, when it comes to either freeing up the possibility of moving one of the other two centers,
mm-hmm,
or moving Nas, you know, later, you know, for a player, because now all of a sudden you can move Nas for a $10 million guy, right, or $12 million guy rather than a $2 million guy. So to me, like, Nas, you almost have to resign this summer just for those two reasons.
As an asset management strategy, I can see it, and then you reevaluate later. I mean,
yeah,
we've got, you know, at worst case scenario, you know, we'll have many more episodes if we can get back into this thing and get it going more consistently, talking about what they should do this offseason, whether it makes sense to keep the bigs together, whether we should be looking for trades for one of them and what those trades would look like. But ultimately, I think we're going to end up on the same page that we are most likely seeing this combination running it back at least until the trade deadline next year. So they can reevaluate at that point, they can reevaluate next offseason, and then that's the point, as we've discussed in the past, where this roster gets expensive and they need to really start making decisions. So if at that point you can pivot off of Carl, you can pivot off of Rudy, have Nas as one of your two centers at 10 to 12 million rather than at 40 to 50 million, then that's a smart strategy. So I, like I said, I am more open to the possibility of keeping him on and bringing him back, depending on what the number happens to be, than I was a couple months ago. So he probably belongs in this higher list for me because, as you mentioned, I was lower on him to begin with. But, you know, we've talked a lot about Rudy. So is he at the top of your guys you think less of list, or would there be somebody else that would come before him?
Well, I guess I didn't rank them. I only have two.
Sure.
The two I have are Rudy and then Finch, who I love individually mm-hmm. as a coach. I love almost everything about him. What I don't like as much is this. I couldn't even tell you what our offense is after right. 2 years of watching it. And I just think it's, I know it's like he likes the flow. He doesn't like pick and roll. And I just think that's the opposite with this team. I think this team should be in a pick and roll team and not be a flow team, because I don't think we have a lot of smart players on the team
right.
at the top. Like, your smartest players are role players. I don't think Ant's a particularly smart team ball player. I don't think Kat's a smart team player. I don't think Rudy's a smart team player. I think Conley is, but, like, how long do you have him? I think Kyle is, you know, mm-hmm. you probably have him for a while, but it's like,
yeah,
he's better as a six man than as a starter. Like, so it's just, that is what, the idea that you can just run this, like, sort of system where the guys kind of figure it out on their own.
Yeah.
Drives me crazy. But I also don't want to see Finch go, because I also think in a couple of years, we're going to be talking about him almost unanimously as one of the best two or three coaches in basketball, because I do see other things. It's like when they call a timeout and they come out of the timeout, that play they script up is always beautiful.
Yeah.
It always works. It's always cool to watch. It's like a fun play, but they never, like, he scripts nothing else. It's just like, they have a sort of a general idea or concept in mind of what they're going to do. They're going, you know, but most of it, what they game plan for is defense.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where I'm lower on Finch. Where I'm lower on Rudy, I don't even know where to start. I don't know if I was just wrong about him when I watched him in Utah, if he got worse, if he was playing hurt,
yeah,
or if it's a little bit of all the above. I just don't know where it went wrong. I mean, I was for the trade. I still think if a deal like that came up again, you have to take a shot at it, because this franchise in this market doesn't get a lot of opportunities where you can go out and get an all NBA player on the trade market. Like, it's so rarely happen. I think the only other one was Jimmy. Sam and Spree didn't even reach that level.
Right.
When you traded for him. So, it's like, I totally get why they did it. I don't fault them for making the trade, even if I think they gave up too much in hindsight looking back. And I'm not as big on the picks, because a pick is just a pick until it becomes a player, and then all of a sudden becomes a lot less attractive. If you're looking at a guy that's picked in the 20s, you're going to be like, well, who cares? He's never going to play.
I mean, what's Kuminga doing right now?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and he was a high pick. You're not giving up a number six pick.
Right. And we stressed out about that pick for a full year.
Yeah. No, yeah. On the flip side, if Rosas was still making the picks and you got, you know, you gave up four Jaden McDaniels, well, that sucks.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, like, because I wouldn't give up one Jaden McDaniels for Rudy right now, or ever, to be honest. But anyway, so, like, I don't know where it was on, or, you know, where things went wrong with Rudy, if it was just I was wrong. The weird thing with him is I don't even think he's as good a person as we were led to believe when he came here. You know, you heard all these things. I almost think he's a little bit more for show. I don't think he's a bad guy. It's not that. I just think he's a little bit prickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, in the way that D'Lo was, but D'Lo, you kind of expected it because of his facial expressions and he was kind of too cool for school all the time. Rudy's not that, but he kind of fakes with a smile and he's like, I think he probably is pretty more standoffish with the other players than D'Lo was. And so I just, there's a weirdness about him that I'm like, I don't think he's like, you know,
no, I think he's a diva. I mean, and it's weird because I never considered the center position to be a glamour position the same way that, you know, point guards or even in, you know, crossing sports, a wide receiver would be in the NFL.
Even in like the 90s, like when it was, it was Shaq and Hakeem and Ewing and Robinson.
There was a lot of skill there, but I didn't feel like except for Shaq, I didn't feel like personalities were drawn out.
Oh, that well, personalities.
Like, but Rudy, and now that I'm thinking about it, I'm thinking like, even Embiid is very much like this. Carl is like this, where it's like all of a sudden the biggest personalities and the most attention, like me, is coming out of these big guys now. And maybe it's because of the lack of respect or the feel that they're losing their grip on the league or whatever. Even the last three MVPs have been centers and whatever it happens to be. Like,
it's positionless basketball has creeped over to the personalities.
It has, like, you know, and
you don't. Because you got Jokic, who he's not really like that. I mean, earlier in his career was a little bit more of a whiner with the officials, and you saw a little bit of it in the playoff series, but for the most part, really respectful guy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's the guy who you could consider like doesn't care about basketball. Like
no.
He wants to win. He wants to do his best, but it's not going to ruin his life. You could see him walking away at any moment. You wouldn't be surprised. So
yeah, go play with his horses rather than get the MVP trophy. Yeah.
But no, I mean, like I said earlier, I can come up with probably 10 to 12 caveats for why Rudy's season went this way. And we could justify it. We could talk through it and try to figure out, all right, this is why we should run it back. Because if this thing hadn't happened or if they had done this thing differently, then Rudy would still be just as impactful. And he was, I mean, as much as I probably disliked watching him, he was impactful on the floor in the same, not in the same way that he has been. It's just that the baseline was lower, or he was 65% of the player that he used to be, and age hit him hard, or...
Like, well, I think the other issue for me with Rudy is how much everyone else has to concede in order for Rudy to be successful. And sort of my whole thing with, like, if you... Let's say you never make the Rudy trade, and Kat's your center going into the season, and, you know, whatever. Say you run it back from last year, and you concede all the things you're conceding to make Rudy successful. If you conceded it to Kat, who's a more skilled, talented player, what would Kat look like? I mean, Kat never got that treatment, and he's a more skilled player than Rudy. And Kat's got his own warts. Like, we'll talk about Kat separately. Mm-hmm. But if you said, Kat, all you have to do is be tall, just protect the rim.
Right.
You don't actually have to play defense at all, but everybody's going to talk about how you're an all-defensive player.
You're the one making
if
the difference.
All you do is stand in front of the rim.
Yeah.
And, you know, what would Kat look like as a player? Like, that's the part I think that I didn't really necessarily see in Utah, even though maybe we should have, because, like, Donovan Mitchell, you know, there was, like, cracks there towards the end, too. But in order for Rudy to look like Rudy Gobert, an all-defensive player, everybody else has to give up some chunk of their game on offense too, because Rudy wants to be fed and he can't catch at all. I've been saying on text messages, like he's got worse hands than any professional athlete, including NASCAR drivers that I've ever seen in my life. Like he might as well not even have hands. His hands are so bad. And we somehow force feed him the ball 18 times into the post to watch 9 of them get just slapped away before he even can make a move. And then of the 9 he does secure, only about half of those actually turn into baskets. So it's just like, if just Kat got 18 post touches a game, what would that look like? Mm-hmm. It's just like, there's so many things. Or if Jaden did, or one of these other players, it doesn't have to be Kat because they're in the same position, or Nas. Let's say it's Nas. Yeah. You elevate Nas. What if Nas, instead of having to just be the garbage man on offense and create for himself when everything else breaks down, what if Nas got, you know, that many looks as Rudy gets on offense? The thing that Rudy's not even supposed to be good at.
Right.
It's just, I don't understand.
Well, and I think this is where Finch and Rudy are tied together, because a lot of Rudy's struggles came because of Finch's system, and Finch's system fails because he tried to tailor it around Rudy. And I don't know how you place the blame between the two of them and how this season went. Because if you look at Rudy's impact defensively, watching it game to game wasn't pretty. Like, Yeah, he was just big. It was reputational defense. Guys chose not to shoot around him rather than his ability to actually impact guys. And whether or not you can put the caveat on it of he didn't feel safe going for blocks because he didn't trust his team to rebound behind him, or he...
Which then he didn't do either. So it's just like,
well, right, you know, so like there are plenty of, there are excuses that people have come up with. But if you look at the numbers, the team's defense improved in his on the court minutes versus off the court minutes the same way they traditionally had in Utah. The numbers,
as it should. Yeah, you got a $50 million center, and then you're going to replace him with a $1 million center. It's
it's going to be
worse when the one. I mean, it's like a quarterback in football, right? Like when people talk about, you know, if the starting quarterback goes down, and whether it's Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, whoever, the backup, of course the backup's not going to deliver at the same level as a starter. They're not paid anywhere close to the same because you already know what their value is. When it happens, it's because the starter was an aging guy, or like you had this lightning in a bottle, like Brady coming in for Bledsoe, whatever. It's not so much, it's just like any of the starters, they go down. When the fact that Cat went down and they were at 500 all year, to me, is an achievement, because that was the guy on the team coming into the year, even with Rudy and Ant. And, you know, credit to those guys for keeping the team afloat. And I think both of them deserve credit for it. I don't think it was all Ant, because Ant had a lot of stinkers throughout the year that could have put us in position to have a higher seed if we just took care of business against the Detroits and Houstons and whoever. But then Rudy had some games. He had some big games where, you know, he had his shot going or whatever. But it's just like, even in Utah, they did everything to make Rudy successful. Their whole system was designed to make Rudy look good, not to make Donovan Mitchell look good, or, you know, make Mike Conley look good. It's always designed to make Rudy look good. And that's what I didn't necessarily expect to come here. What I expected when we made the trade was, okay, we have like this super Vandal coming over here. Yeah. And that he's just going to take the same shots Vandal took, but he's going to be this monster on defense, and he's not going to care about the offense, because why would he? He's joining Cat and Ant, two of the best offensive players in the league. Mm-hmm. All instead, you have he to cares do is
more.
Play defense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead, he cared more. Instead, he wanted to prove, it's almost like he had this condescending approach coming in, like, well, I'm the winner here. You guys are the losers that came to get me, because I'm the guy that knows how to win. And I'm going to show you how we're going to do things my way. Now I get a team built around me. That's the way I kind of felt Rudy was coming into this. And when he just there's not even like LeBron's not treated that way. Maybe Giannis has kind of got the same sort of treatment in Milwaukee, but he deserves it. I'm not, you know, ripping our Luka in Dallas, but
I mean,
Rudy's
if
on
Ant,
the tier.
Yeah. If Ant goes out and wins a title, he can determine how we run our offense for the next 10 years. I don't care.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. But what did Rudy do? He got that walking in to Utah. And it's not because Utah was like, oh, he's so good. What Utah did was smart. Like, I get why they did it. They said, look, this guy's really, really good on defense. He's really, really bad on offense. We're going to magnify the good and minimize the bad by building and constructing our system and our other players around him to make him successful and make him palatable on offense, but elite on defense.
Well, and we're also going to put the right players around him so that when we have a rigid offensive approach, and we make everybody play in a certain way, we're going to have the right people to maximize that system. But then they weren't flexible. They couldn't do anything to change what they were doing. They didn't have the right people to adjust. Even if Rudy had the ability to adjust defensively, which I think he showed a little bit more this year, he was not as paint-bound. He was more willing to stretch it out than he had been in the past. In Utah, the problem was that they had worked so hard to maximize Rudy's skill set that the rest of the players couldn't do anything in a different situation.
Right.
And, I mean, for all of Rudy's positives on defense, he was equally or greater a negative on offense. And like I said, I don't know if that's on him. I don't know if that's on Finch for not reining that in. And I don't know if I even want it to mean you have to play a rigid style of offense when Rudy's on the floor and you can't play the way Finch wants you to play, because why are, like, at that point we need to really just have the discussion of whether or not it's worth it. Should we change all of the things to be more Utah-centric and have a rigid offensive style because we acquired this guy who can't do anything else? And long-term, that's going to, unless one of the two of them can find something that unlocks this combination or this team, that's the conversation we're going to need to continue to have.
Yeah, I do think some of it's on Finch. But at the end of the day, I mean, it's like, look, Rudy is paid the max.
Mm-hmm.
I think he should be held to the same standard that Cat, who's been taking all the blame for the last several years for the lack of any success.
Yeah.
He should get as much or more than blame than Cat. Cat's annoying. You know, like, he does some things that bug me just from his personality and his play too. But I would say the one thing that the difference there is Cat was the most willing player on the entire roster, I think, to change his game to make it work.
Yeah.
Out of everybody. And I said the same thing last year. That kind of was what bugged me last year, was that he was the one conceding the most shots to let Beverly shoot more, let D'Lo shoot more. I didn't care about Ant getting his shots, but it should have been Cat and Ant should be have right around the same number of shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care if anybody else on the team gets a shot. That's the way that I think the offense should function.
Sure.
When you got two guys that are so elite on offense, and then you have a bunch of guys who are mediocre to slightly above mediocre on offense, you know, I just, like, you know, like, you got the Jaden and Nas, but they can get their own shots. Like, you don't have to set up an offense for them, run plays for them. Anyway, so I think Rudy needs to be held, because I don't think Rudy's ever been held accountable. I think in Utah, he kind of got a free pass his entire time there, and for whatever the reasons are. Now, maybe, you know, we don't follow the local media there, but, like, nationally, the view I have of the way Utah treated him was, like, they treated him like a star,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't, you know, to be fair, I don't really recall them scapegoating Donovan Mitchell for much either, but I think of the two, Mitchell took more heat than Rudy for any lack of playoff success that they may have had. I think Rudy a little bit in the last time because he got played off the floor and there was some talk there, but beyond that, it was more of, like, you know, Donovan had a poor night shooting and that sunk him, or, you know, there's things like that that would come up. Is he just, you know, can he become a more efficient, like, and I think it was unfair then, and I think it's unfair now to let Rudy kind of skate by with, like, well, look what he does on defense. Look at the on-off numbers on defense. It's like, you know, well, what if Steven Adams was in that position here?
Yeah.
Would the numbers look similar, because he's about the same size and he can pass a little better and he's not going to demand as many shots?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I mean, so we're going to beat around this bush for a while, and I think that the largest question we're going to continue facing, the largest questions the organizations are going to face, is going to be not can this work, not can this team is currently constructed with minimal changes be successful. It's, from your perspective, is it the most likely path to work? Or would there be more of a chance of success, however you want to define success, in pivoting sooner rather than later, either with Rudy or Carl, based on what you could get back for the two of them?
So I think it depends on what you get back, obviously. And I think I'm more hesitant to trade Carl,
mm-hmm.
because I just think it's really rare to get a player of his talent back. Even fit aside. I think the elephant in the room is, what the hell works next to Ant? I don't think anybody can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
They can tell you a Jaden and a Nas work with Ant, because that Jaden and Ant don't, or Jaden and Nas don't have, need any offense structured for them. But if you were to add a second star next to Ant, what would that look like? And how do you know it would work?
Yep.
And you could, I'm not saying people can't have opinions and have good rationale for why they think a certain type of star would fit next to him. I just, what I would contend is, we don't know,
mm-hmm.
because I haven't seen anything from Anthony Edwards to indicate to me a style of play that he's comfortable in playing a two-man, three-man game.
Yep.
It's a one-on-one game all the time with Ant. Like, he might have 10 assist games where he's passing, but it's not of any sort of one guy or a system. It's not like a MJ and Scotty or Paul George and Kawhi. It's a kind of a fluky, like Ant is just, he's hitting open guys. He can do that. Like Ant's extremely skilled. This isn't an indictment of Ant.
No.
It's more of a question of like, and if I had to like, so I think challenge number one is working with Ant to develop more than a one-on-one game so that he can trust other guys. He's never had to do it in college. I'm sure he never had to do it in high school if he didn't have to do it in college.
Right.
And thus far, he hasn't had to do it in the NBA. He just kind of picks his moments to go and then lets everybody else kind of do their thing. And he just sits in the corner when they're doing their thing, you know, but he's just kind of a, either it's my turn or it's your guys' turn, like kind of player, like we've said in our text messages, like kind of like Kobe. He's more Kobe than, you know, than a lot of these other players he's been compared to, or the dream of him becoming a Luka, like, you know, with becoming more of a point Ant and being like Luka or James Harden or whatever. Those guys have more game with other players, even if they're more ball dominant. Whereas Kobe was just, it was Kobe would take over the game, and then there he would like let you have his crumbs, like, you know, the other players. And that's kind of the way Ant seems to be progressing to me. And if it were me, so number one challenge is fixing that or kind of working with him on that. And if I'm doing that, I think a player with the skill set that Towns has is an option that would make a lot of sense because theoretically he could be a good pick and roll partner because pick or poison, who are you going to, you know, go follow to the rim and who are you going to chase out at the 3-point line to stop the shot? They're both deadly in those situations. Now, can it work from a dynamic standpoint? Cat was the guy. He was the number one pick, as was Ant. They both kind of have that. And I think it can. I think, one, those two get along a lot better than anybody want to give them credit for.
Yep.
People want to create these rifts because they want to get Cat out of here. But then, two, I think Cat's already shown a willingness to be Robin to Ant's Batman. And I don't know that if you go and somehow you're able to turn Cat or Rudy into Damian Lillard or Paul George or you know, whoever, some other second star, that they're going to come in and be willing to let Ant be the guy. Because like, look what happened with Rudy. We brought Rudy in and Rudy thinks he's the guy over Cat, over Ant, you know. And so it's just, and Rudy, you didn't expect that because he wasn't even an offensive minded guy, but he comes in and he's like, okay, what do you got for me? What's the playbook? Like, it's all me, right? Like, that's kind of the way I read his rationale on offense. It's like, you brought me here because you saw untapped potential and I agree with you. So let's get to work. Let's feed me the ball.
Right,
you
let's know, go and, figure it out. Yep.
Yeah. And I just, that worries me. So I guess if I had to choose, I think it's more likely that it has to work with that, this core, than likely that you're going to be able to trade either Cat or Rudy for somebody that's going to make that core succeed at a level that you want them to succeed at. Mm-hmm. I don't see us getting a second player to pair with Ant for Rudy or Cat that's going to make them a championship contender. And I think if you squint and you see, you know, whether it's Finch figuring things out or it's a different coach and you get a system together, Rudy aside, I don't even really care if Rudy's on the team. So I'm just kind of dismissing him. But if you're just looking at a core of, like, say it's Ant, Jaden, Cat, I think that has more potential to be a contending team than Ant, Jaden, and whatever you're going to get for Cat or Ant. But that being said, I've seen some of the other media people kind of throw out some rumors, or like not rumors, but trade ideas for Cat. And they're all more down on Cat than I am, but they all are putting out names of guys.
More. Yeah.
Well, I don't, more than I think they can get.
Right.
They might be right. I'm not saying they're wrong on what they think they can get, but I just don't think. I saw Mackey throw out Jaylen Brown. Sure. If I can get Jaylen Brown for Cat, yes, I'll trade Cat right now. I don't think you're going to get Jaylen Brown for Cat.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that works, you know, with Jaden anyway. But I saw that. I saw his list. And of his list, like, I think there was three of them that I just didn't think. I don't think we could get that much for Cat back.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could, then I'd be a lot more open to trading Cat than I am currently.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm largely on the same page. And mainly because what I've seen, I have better ideas on how to fix what I've seen than I have on how to create what doesn't exist at the moment. So I can think of ways, and I can think of the concept of how this two big team might work and what you would need to do to work on with individual people. I think, like you said, the hardest part of that is that none of those three are, I don't know the right word, additive to the others. There's no greater than the sum of their parts with the three of them.
And I think the other part is, of the two, like, let's just look at the two bigs. Which one do you think has more potential to work with Ant? Like, look, Ant's your guy, right? Mm-hmm. Ant's the guy that's not moving,
yeah,
or not changing. And if we're building this to fit around Ant, you know, maybe the answer is neither of them do,
right?
And that's fine. But then, are you expecting to get that guy in the draft, or are you expecting to get that guy
in the trade
for right. one of those guys? Yep. And then
who's it going to be? Know, yeah. And right. it all comes down to who's going to be. You can't answer this. Could they be better with the trade unless you know who the trade is for, which I understand. But, you know, if we're going to examine who he's better with, I mean, we can take a look at who he has been better with, which is not going to paint the full picture, because the Timberwolves have a growth progression for him, and they have a path that they want him to follow and skills they want him to add to become better with these types of players. And Ant has a lot of areas to grow in too. But if we look at least who Ant has succeeded with, the overall this year, Ant was plus 1.9 per 100 possessions, just in his time on the floor versus off the floor. They scored 115 points per possession, largely gave up 113, points per 100 possessions. So if you take a look at his combinations with the bigs, when they were both on the floor, the offense was at 108.2, which was horrible, but the defense was at 105.4. So the three of them cumulatively had an awful offense and an amazing defense.
I think I saw Dane mention, like, the starting five with the two bigs
mm-hmm.
was, like, better than the best defense in basketball this year.
Yeah.
But worse than the worst offense.
I think he was just saying those two together, Carl and
Rudy.
Was
it just the two?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when they were on the floor together, yeah, they were had the best defense, worst offense, largely.
And then when Kat was in and Rudy was off, it was...
Yeah. Best offense and...
Best offense and middle of the pack defense, yeah. And then with Rudy, it was... I don't remember. Was it best defense, but they were...
Well, so I have it. So Rudy this year, just in his time on the floor, was a largely net neutral player. They scored 112.8 points per possession and they gave up 112.6. So for everything he did on defense, he gave back on offense. Kat and Rudy together, the offense was worse. It was 107.5. Defense was even better, 106.6. And then with Kat on the floor without Rudy, it was 120.1 offense and then 116.1 defense. So, I mean, the numbers largely line up with the eye test, with what you'd expect out of watching them, with even their reputations. It's just we needed the Rudy lineups and his time on the floor to be better offensively and him to not get the whole thing stuck in mud. Mm-hmm. But if we're looking at the Ant numbers, like we said, with both of them on the floor, it wasn't a bad team. It was a really great team defensively. It was a bad team offensively, but overall they had a minor net, you know, positive number. If it was just Ant and Kat on the floor, unfortunately, the offense went up to 119.5 per 100 possessions, but the defense was at 121.4. So without Rudy on the floor, when Ant and Kat were out there, it was a really bad defense. And overall, they were net negative this year. And part of that is for, you know, Carl's struggles. He did not have his best season. If we go back a year, if we look at Ant and Carl's time on the floor last year, they were plus 4 points per possession. It was a 116.7 offense and a 112.6 defense. So I think there's more to be taken from that number between Ant and Carl than there was between their time this year, just with the struggles that we saw Carl go through. He wasn't shooting the same way before the injury, and then he was coming back from injury afterwards.
And he was confused on defense when he was out there.
Yep.
I mean, although he was confused with Rudy too, and that was the best. Like, they didn't know which guy. Like, there's, like, no communication. It's just weird.
So Ant and Rudy was a minor net positive. I mean, 113.9 offense, 113.1 defense. Both of those numbers, like, the offense isn't the world's worst and the defense isn't bad, but still you're not, I mean, you're a 500 team. I mean, it's what they saw all year at that number. And then with Nas, if both of the other bigs were off the floor, it was 117.2 offense and a 114.6 defense. So this year, the big that Ant worked best with was Nas. The big he's worked best with historically was Carl last year, but
I was going to joke when we were talking about Nas that I'm like, well, maybe Nas is the one you keep and you get rid of both.
Yeah, which...
If you're really trying to build around Ant
yeah.
and Jaden as your future, then, you know, and you don't care about the playoffs for the next 3 or 4 years, then yeah, maybe you take what you can get for Rudy and Kat, mm-hmm. and Naz is your starting center, and you're building up that rapport, and those are the three you're building around, and whatever your draft picks are 3-point shooting and defense.
Yeah.
Because you only have one defender, you know. But it's, again, it goes back to the, you know, of the, if you're choosing between one of the two bigs, every 100 times out of 100, I would take Kat over Rudy, just because I think Rudy is catered too much on defense to make him mm-hmm. as successful as he is. And I think if you catered that much to Kat, maybe he wouldn't be as good as Rudy on defense, but he's going to be a lot better than he's been historically. If you changed all the stuff around him to suit his defensive, I think they did a little bit of that last year with the high wall and that kind of stuff. Like, Kat was pretty yep. decent on defense last year. So, but if you're to, like, the other question is just the chemistry. Ant and Rudy have zero chemistry. It seems like there's issues there. I don't think Ant dislikes anybody. He just seems to be a people person. Yep. I don't necessarily think Rudy dislikes Ant either, but I don't think either of them like playing with each other on the floor at the same time, because I don't think either of them like or understand each other's games. Like, and so I don't know that makes sense that you're going to jettison the big that has some chemistry with them, at least personality wise, and they like playing together, for the guy who they don't like. Cause I feel like if I were to predict, we trade Kat, I think in another year, you're also trying to trade Rudy.
Yeah.
And then I think you're like, great. Now is Ant just ready to get out of here and demand a trade because he's like, you're blowing everything up. And that is probably what weighs on me the most in terms of who to keep.
Right.
And I think Kat is a guy that Ant likes, and you know, they're close. And so that keeps him happy. And then he's a guy that I think he feels like he can play with and count on, even if it is kind of a, you know, like you're taking turns on offense.
Right.
I think they should be better together. If they could both, like, you could transplant brains into their heads
right.
to learn how to, like, play a two-man. I think Carl prides himself on thinking he can play with other people, but I don't think it works.
Yeah.
I don't think Ant even thinks he. I think Ant just is like, I think Ant sees basketball as a one-on-one game.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, guys move within the offense to get out of the way of the guy that has the ball.
Yeah.
I think that's the way Ant sees offense, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a tough one. I think that's the biggest problem with the team is just now you have Rudy. What do you do with him? I think you have to shop him and see if there's something you can salvage, even if you take a big hit on it, because I think it's going to be a worse hit next year. And I think next year it's going to be unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think they can work. I think that's the question. It's whether or not the two bigs can work. I do think two bigs can work. I even think these two bigs can work just in terms of skill sets. What I don't think can work is the personalities.
Yeah.
I think that's the bigger problem than what, like, a two big. Look, I keep saying Milwaukee's really a two big team. Like, all the teams that are successful outside of the Warriors have multiple bigs. And the only team that has worked with a small ball lineup in the last, I don't even know how many years, is the Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody else has made that work. And they have one of the, in my opinion, four best players in the history of the game, and Steph Curry, to make that work. You're not going to be able to recreate that. And so I hate going small just to, like, make it look like you're playing basketball at a better, because it's more appeasing, you know, to watch a bunch of guards dribble around and in and out of their legs and shoot jumpers.
Yeah, I think for me, and we'll close on this, is largely that either of them is welcome to stay if they are willing to take the mindset that they are a very, very good role player. And not necessarily saying that we have to have a star and a bunch of role players. Like, I don't think Ant's ready for that yet. He has plenty of growth to go through, as we've talked about. But as long as either Carl or Rudy consider themselves a star, or the star, or whatever.
Yeah, it's just the star. I think they can be, like, look, do you think Kat can operate as Paul George to Ant's Kawhi?
I think
Not in terms of like their skill sets, just in terms of like the dynamic, the two-man dynamic of like, I don't think Paul George thinks he's the best player on the team. Do you think, I think Kat already thinks that, to be honest. I think Kat already can see that Ant is the guy. I think Kat's biggest issue is the pressure that he put on himself as the number one pick, and then conversely with the city and team sort of ridden with him on, is that he's the franchise changing number one pick. I think it's been easier to start to let go of that for him because Ant's also a number one pick. So that he doesn't have to be, he can be successful and be comfortable being successful as the second guy. Cause like, look, he wasn't that guy in Kentucky. He wasn't even a starter in Kentucky. So he was the number one pick, but he's, you know, they had Booker and they had Willie Cauley-Stein. They had all these other guys there, and he was like the super six man. And so then he came and he was the number one. And all of a sudden he's like kind of talking about how he was the best player. So I think he can be the number two guy here.
Yeah, and I think he has shown more steps to that than Rudy has, obviously. Especially as he has grown in his relationship with Ant. I think the part where it gets hard is that when push comes to shove, Carl thinks that he needs to make an impact by getting the ball and by doing something with it. He still sees that as his bread and butter. He still sees feed me on the post or give it to me at the nail or feed me at the three-point line and I will do my 13 pump, you know, jump shot, you know, pump shot, jab step, spin move, try and get to the basket. I still think he sees most of his value as happening with the ball in his hands. And when he gets stressed and when he gets put under pressure, he goes more to that rather than trying to make an impact in other ways and just allowing himself to be as effective as he was when Jimmy, in the Jimmy year, as the...
And I think that's where... And I think that's more of a coaching thing than it is a Carl thing, to be honest. Right. I think you have to give them bumpers.
Yep.
And they don't have any bumpers. It's free flowing, and you got a bunch of dum dums.
Yep.
I hate to agree with Barkley and basketball stuff, but this is a team full of dum dums that are just out there, kind of like thinking they know best. And this is where I think Finch needs to be more Nick Nurse.
Yeah.
Like you have to have a system. Like it's fine to play in the flow when you're going on these 20-4 runs, because obviously they're capable of it, but they're also capable of going on, you know, 0-20 runs, like, and losing those leads.
The coach needs to be able to see what the trends are and call something on the sideline and say, hammer that pick and roll for the next 10 possessions because that's what's working against this defense right now. Yeah.
And just having a place like, you watch the five guys come down the court and it's like they don't even know where they should go stand on the court.
Yeah.
On offense, like they're kind of communicating in a real time, and it's like Jaden kind of always goes to the same spot, but like sometimes Ant goes to a corner, sometimes he sits at the top of the key wanting to run the ball, sometimes Carl goes low, sometimes he comes up to like the elbow, like they're kind of like pointing at each other, like no, you go there, like they're constantly, and they're wasting 8 seconds of the shot clock just trying to script a play on the fly, and that's where it's like, okay, if you just had like some sort of framework where when you're coming down into a half court set, everybody just kind of knows where to be. And like that's your default position. And you can flow from there. Even I would take that, even if it's not every place, you know, and I'm no basketball is every play scripted, but even if you're not calling out plays from the side as a coach, you have a framework in place where they have a starting point.
Yep.
So there's not this, I think that would help on defense too when they're getting beat in transition and Carl doesn't know, do I have the five? Do you have the five? Like if they just always know, okay, like this is what we do every time this play. Like Denver, you watch Denver, every scenario, those guys know what their role is. And like, you know, whether it's a transition defense for them, they know what role, all five guys know what role, whether it's a starters or bench, they all know what they're supposed to do. On offense, you know, they come down in a fast break or they come down in a half court. They all know where each other are supposed to be and, you know, what everybody's role is on that. The Wolves come down, you don't even know who's going to be taking a shot or, like, who you're running the play for. So it's just, that's what I think needs to be fixed the most. And to that point, we don't know if Rudy and Kat can coalesce there any more than we know if Kat and Ant or Rudy and Ant can either. But I think it's easier with only one of them. Of those two, I think if it was, you know, the other big was somebody else, I think it would be just fine. But
yeah, it's a challenge, and it's one that we're going to tackle. As we come back next time, we're going to take a look at what this team could use if all options were on the table. What they need the most, where we would go in that direction, what we would target. And then we will start trying to solve the tricky problem of can they get those things with the resources that are available to them. Chad, it has been a wonderful time talking with you again. I've really appreciated it. We can do this face-to-face rather than over text again. Let's try to keep it going as the offseason runs on.
Hey, sounds good, buddy.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, man.
Bye. Bye. Thank you.